Well, hey, everybody, welcome to episode 22 of the Ankeny Fanatic Weekly Podcast. As always, it is brought to you by our good friends at the Ankeny Office of Iowa Realty. They're located at 1802 Southeast Delaware, suite number 103. Iowa Realty is the proud sponsor of Ankeny Fanatic. They have 75 agents specializing in residential, commercial, farm, and land properties. Well, we're going to talk a lot of football today with a couple of former Iowa State players. In a little while, we're going to talk to Joel Lanning. He's going to come in and talk about where his football career is headed right now. But first, we want to bring in our first guest. He is a former Cyclone who played under Dan McCartney in the early 2000s. He was a receiver who racked up over 1,300 yards in his career. But right now, he's best known as the Iowa State Senator for the 19th District here in Ankeny. He is Jack Whitford. Jack, thanks for coming in. How you doing?
No problem. I'm doing good. Thanks for having me.
Oh, you bet. Well, the reason I wanted to have you on the podcast today is because I know you were recognized at an Iowa State game earlier this season for the work that you've done regarding concussions and the head trauma issue in football and some other sports. And last spring, you supported a bill in the Iowa legislature that was passed into law. It requires the development of new training materials for coaches and officials that relate to brain injuries and concussions. You know, do you feel like this was a big step forward in tackling these issues here in Iowa?
No, I do. And, you know, I've enjoyed my time in the Iowa Senate, and, you know, it gives you an opportunity to look at issues that affect a lot of people. And we deal with hundreds of issues every year, but this is one that really caught my attention. With the attention surrounding concussions in football and the number of parents that are starting to get even more concerned than ever about concussions and the effect on their kids, I thought it was time to really take a look at passing a law like this to protect kids, one, but also to try to help the security of the long-term security of football. You know, there are a lot of parents now that are saying, you know what, I like to watch football. I'm not sure I want my kids to play it. And if we don't do something as policymakers and school administration to make sure our kids are safe, you're going to get more and more parents that just don't want their kids playing. And that was a big part of the motivation.
Well, sure. And obviously, you played football at a high level in college. You know, did you ever suffer, you know, any concussions during your career?
You know, I got dinged a couple times where, you know, you start seeing stars, you go out for a play, you come back. Maybe technically that's a concussion in these days. I was very fortunate to where I never got knocked out cold. I had a lot of friends and teammates, obviously, that went through that. I was very fortunate that I didn't. But, you know, it's something that the players are just getting bigger and faster. You know, I go down and watch Iowa State now and stand on the sideline, and you can't believe how big the guys are now.
It's like, oh, yeah.
I don't remember them being that big and that fast, and they hit harder and harder than they ever have. And you know, you see it, and maybe it's just that we have a better view of games on TV now than we ever did, and the hits look bigger. I don't know, but it's definitely a violent game, and we need to continue to help protect our kids and our players.
When you played in the era before, you know, there was all this concern about the head trauma issue. You know, did you ever have any concerns while you were playing about the long-term effects, you know, what would have on your, you know, life?
No, you know, I mean, they didn't look at concussions the same way, you know, and it's really weird. You know, one of the things that when we were working on this law, one of the advocates, you know, a lot of the athletic trainers from around the state came to talk to us about it. And one was Mark Coberly from Iowa State, fantastic athletic trainer. He's been there for many, many years. But as you're talking to these advocates, they always say, you know, if a kid has a broken arm or a broken ankle, you're not going to put him back in the game. And it doesn't matter if it's a state championship game or not, you're not going to put him back in the game with a broken leg. So why would you put him back in the game with a broken brain? And that, to me, is like, that's a different way to look at it. Because the way I grew up, the way you grew up with sports, oh, you got knocked out, go over there, take some sniffing salts, and then get back in there. And it's just a different era, and we know more and more about brain injuries now, and we have to change how we think.
Right, right. Well, I never played football at too high of a level back when I was a kid. Probably the worst injury I ever had. I was playing Little League when I was about 12, and one of our neighbor kids threw a fastball at me that I just didn't react too fast enough, hit me right square in the eye.
Oh.
And my, you know, my eye swelled up. But, you know, I just stayed at practice. I went home afterwards, and my mom, who was a nurse, was like, why didn't you come home? I was like, well, coach didn't send me home, so.
Time to keep playing, yeah.
Well, I'm sure you followed, you know, how the NFL is dealing with the CTE issue. You know, do you think the league is doing enough, you know, with some of these new tackling rules to make the game safer?
You know, that's a loaded question, because to me, they're almost going too far in some ways with it. I mean, we have to be careful. And when there are legitimate, you know, targeting calls where you are just absolutely going for someone's head, you got to stop that. But on the other hand, you watch these games and these guys are running so fast and sometimes you can accidentally hit someone in the head. And, you know, especially in college football where they kick them out, you know, these guys only get 12 opportunities to play. And we saw it at Iowa State last weekend with Texas Tech. The guy gets a target and he's gone in the first quarter. And I think there's a fine line there. I mean, when it is deliberate and intentional, trying to hurt someone, yes, we need to take care of that. But it's very difficult for officials to determine what's going on too. And so I think they're doing their best, but it's very difficult. You know, the other thing I think we need to continue to talk about is with youth football too. And at what age do kids need to start playing tackle football? What age should they start playing tackle football? I don't see that being something that we legislate. People come to me and say, well, we should ban tackle football under a certain age. That's not something that I think that we're going to legislate at the Capitol. But as parents, you can make that decision for yourself, whether you think third grade's the right age or seventh grade or ninth grade. And I think that will be something that gets a lot more conversation over the next few years.
Yeah, my son never played football. What age do they normally start playing tackle football?
I think in Ankeny they start about third grade with tackle football. I only have a four-year-old right now, so he's not to the age where you have to decide. My personal philosophy, and it's not even so much for concussions, but there's just not, in my opinion, there's not really a need to start a kid in third grade at tackle football. They might be a little bit smaller than everyone else. They get hit really hard, and they say, I don't want to play football anymore. And that's not healthy. I mean, they could get a lot bigger, and then that you never know if they would ever want to play again. And there's other injuries, but more so just learning the game. I don't think you need – football is one of those sports where you don't need to start football in third grade to be good. I mean, if you look at the NFL any given Sunday, there are guys that didn't even play college football that are playing in the NFL. The Patriots have a receiver. I think it's Hogan, I think. He played college lacrosse.
Wow.
He was at Penn State. So, when you see him on Sunday Night Football, he says Penn State lacrosse because he didn't play football there. And he's a starting receiver in the NFL. And that just shows you don't need to start in third grade to have a great football career. You know,
sure.
And again, that's something that I think over time, more and more parents are going to realize that you don't need to start that early.
Well, I know that on all levels of football, you know, they've tried to make the helmets, you know, safer over the years. From your experience, you know, do you think that has made much of a difference, or is there only, you know, so much that they can do to cushion some of those blows?
Yeah, I think it has made a difference. I think the technology is a lot better. It's probably only keeping up with the players getting bigger and faster. So the same danger is probably there because the guys are bigger and faster than they ever were. And so better technology probably just evens that out. But I think you're going to see a lot more attention paid to the helmets and the technology and a lot more research into it. I mean, the NFL, I think, has done a good job trying to lead on this issue because, look, if no one wants to play football, there's too much money at stake for the NFL. So they're going to continue to put money into research and development and hopefully continue to get better with the equipment.
Well, it was about 3 years ago that the concussion movie came out, and I know that the NFL wasn't thrilled with the release of the movie, but, you know, do you think that the movie, you know, helped further the discussion on the issue?
Yeah, and I think when you see superstars like Junior Seau, here locally, Tyler Sash, start killing themselves in the prime of their life, that sends shockwaves to a lot of parents. I mean, Tyler Sash was a legend here in the state of Iowa, and all of a sudden he kills himself, which most people think has to do with CTE, and parents across Iowa are saying, what the heck, you know, is it worth it? You know, would I trade my son being an Iowa legend and a Super Bowl NFL player for a couple of years if that's how it's going to end? And parents say, no, that's not the way it should be. And so I think it's a culmination of all of that. The movie certainly started it, but, you know, the Junior Seau events and the Tyler Sash and others are just continuing that conversation.
Well, recently, Merrill Hodges' name has been in the news because he co-authored a book called Brainwashed, The Bad Science Behind CTE and the Plot to Destroy Football. Now, have you read his book, or do you have any interest in doing so?
I haven't read his book, and I think you shouldn't take all of the CTE research at face value. I know one of the studies they did, it took 100 and some brains of NFL former players that and studied it, but those are people that likely already had it, and so they put it in the study. So yeah, almost all of them are going to come back because they'd already been somewhat diagnosed with it or thought they'd have it. I don't think it was just a true research project or survey. So I have not read Merrill Hodges' book, but I would be interested in reading that.
Well, considering that his own NFL career was cut short due to brain damage from repeated concussions, you know, and the fact that he's successfully sued the Chicago Bears team doctor for $1.5 million after the end of his career, it seems like maybe he'd be the last guy to write a book
like
this.
and you know, I watch football, and there's a I watch football, and I'm probably one of the more vocal ones on. I don't like a lot of the targeting calls that go on. I don't like a lot of the late hits and stuff. There is a balance to find here. I mean, and what we were trying to find when we're trying to write legislation is, high school is not college, and is certainly not the NFL. And so in high school, what can we do here in the state of Iowa to make sure it's safe? And that doesn't mean that I don't want kids playing football. That doesn't mean I don't want my kids playing football. It's just, you have to find the balance to make sure that in these contact sports, when we put kids out there, it is a safe environment.
Well, you mentioned your son, Drew, earlier. You said he's four. And to me, third grade maybe does seem kind of early to play tackle football as well. But, you know, do you have any concerns at all about him playing later on?
No, I don't. I sit here without him, you know, trying to put pressure on me at this age, wanting to play tackle football and saying, I'm going to try to hold off as long as I can with tackle. I don't have concerns, but what really, you know, this concussion bill has been around for 5 or 6 years. They've been trying to push it. The athletic trainers haven't had a lot of success. And what really made me think, okay, it's time to start looking at this bill, is I started to think about my son playing football. And I said, I want him to play football if he wants to. I'd love to have him play football, but I'm not sure I want him to be a middle linebacker. I'm not sure I want him to be a strong safety, because that's where you take so much abuse in the head. And I thought, if someone that loves football as much as I do and played like I did is starting to have doubts about their kids, there's a lot of people having doubts. And so that's where I said, you know, it's time to do something about this.
Do you think the game is going to look a lot different, you know, 20 years from now?
Yeah, I mean, it already looks a lot different than when I played. I mean, the rules of contact have changed so much. And I can't remember what NFL game it was. Maybe 3 weeks ago, there was a game-winning touchdown in the corner of the end zone. 10 years ago, 15 years ago when I played, that receiver would have been knocked out. And it would have, the safety would have came in, knocked the ball out, knocked the guy out, and you would have went to the next play, and that game-winning catch would have never happened. But in today's game, the guy comes in, he doesn't want to hit and get a fine or get kicked out or right. get that penalty. So he just lays off, and the guy catches a touchdown and wins the game. And I can't remember what game that was, but it was about 3 weeks ago. And so the game is already changing. You're already seeing rules with quarterbacks where, I mean, you might as well put flags on them because you can't hit them. So the game is changing, and I think it will continue to. That's why you see so many points being scored in the NFL, is you can't hit anyone anymore.
Right.
And as a receiver, you can't touch them. Or as a defensive back, you can't touch a receiver. And so it's a lot more offensive-minded game.
Now, do you think there's more that can be done, you know, to make the game safer in the future? Are there any other rule changes that you'd like to see, like maybe eliminating kickoffs altogether?
You know, we're getting pretty close to that point. And there is a lot of violence that happens on kickoffs. It takes a little bit of excitement out of the game, but I don't think it changes the game much if you don't do kickoffs. You know, even this year with the new change as far as fair catches in college, you're seeing a lot more guys just fair catch it, take it at the 25 and go. So whether they make the rule change and eliminate it, or it just gets to the point where there basically aren't kickoff returns even if they go through the motions, I think that's going to happen, yeah.
I'm sure Aaron Rodgers would like to see the kickoffs eliminated after that game the other
no
day.
No doubt. No doubt.
Well, let's talk a little ISU football. You obviously still follow the Cyclones closely. I know you're part of the post-game radio show.
Yeah.
You know, do you like the Cyclones' chances to get to the Big 12 title game?
You know, I like them better than I did 3 weeks ago.
Yeah, for sure.
No, I mean, the turnaround this team has had since they started 1-3 has been remarkable. I mean, that season could have easily gotten away from them going 1-4 and then to 1-5. And then you're having a whole different conversation today than we are having. That win at Oklahoma State was phenomenal. And then to back it up the next week with Texas Tech, they just have something special. And I've got to know Coach Campbell a little bit. He just gets it. He's just a guy that understands football, understands running an organization, understands how to build a program, and it's really exciting times and aims. So do I like their chances? Yeah. I mean, the toughest game left is Texas at home. I've been on record all year saying this is the year we're going to get Kansas State, and we're going to change the tide forever. This is the year.
Yeah, they have to beat them.
And so, you know, can they get through Kansas and Baylor without stumbling? And then you got a huge game at Texas, and we've played Texas fairly well the last few years. And we're not going to be favored in that game, but I wouldn't bet against this team right now.
Yeah, if they can take care of business these next 2 weeks, boy, that game down in Texas, that might be the biggest regular season game that they've had since I don't know when.
Yeah, since probably just after I played when they missed a couple kicks that would have sent them to the Big 12 title game.
That's right. Well, I was looking at an old roster today, and you were listed at 5'10 and 181 when you played at Iowa State. You talked about how big, you know, the guys are now. You know, when you look at some of these guys like Akeem Butler, who's 6'6 and 225, you know, do you ever wonder what you could have accomplished if you'd had some of those physical tools?
Yeah, I mean, that's what I'm talking about. You go to practice, and it's like, they don't have receivers that look like me anymore. I guess they have some. You know, Trevor Ryan was about my size, and I would have loved to play in the offenses they get to play in now. You know, when I played, it was just the end of that run the ball era, mm-hmm. where not hardly anyone, Mike Leach and Oklahoma and then Texas Tech, were just starting this spread air raid stuff that I would have loved to play in that offense. But, you know, yeah, the physical tools these guys have, like Alan Lazard last year and Akeem Butler and even Matt Eaton, these guys are just phenomenal athletes. And, you know, Akeem Butler is one that I would love to see him come back for another year. For a senior, because people forget he's only a junior.
Right, right.
But I don't know if we'll be that lucky. I mean, he's going to be a top draft pick, and, you know, I would not blame him at all for leaving.
No, not at all. Well, how surprised are you by Brock Purdy's emergence here over the last few weeks? You know, do you have any idea that this was coming?
I mean, you hear rumors from talking to coaches and other players that he's the real deal when he got to camp and, you know, going through as a backup. You never really know about a player until they step on the field on game day. Especially at that position. I mean, you could be an all-star in practice when you know you're not going to get hit by anyone because you don't hit quarterbacks in practice. How you react on Saturday is everything for a quarterback. And it seems like Brock Purdy just has it. He has that it factor where he's very confident and has the tools to go with it. And so he has such a bright future. And, you know, a kid like that has so much success at an early age, the most difficult part, in my opinion, is can you handle success? You know, everyone talks about can you handle failure, but can you handle success is a whole different thing, because all of a sudden you go from essentially the third stringer to the starting quarterback. Everyone on ESPN is talking about you. You're winning Player of the Year, you know, National Player of the Year awards, and now you're the big man on campus at 18 years old. That's hard to deal with, and it's hard to kind of keep the confidence that you play with without getting cocky. And it seems like to this point, he has done a phenomenal job of just channeling all that and pushing aside and staying focused on what makes him good.
Well, I know when he first got into that Akron game, I was down on the sidelines, and I saw him, you know, warming up or making a few practice throws, and, you know, he's not a very big guy. I mean, no. You look at him and you think, well, boy, can he play at this level? But like I said, he just got that it factor.
Yeah, and you know, look, the two wins that they've had the last couple of weeks, Oklahoma State and Texas Tech, it took a Brock Purdy making a play at the end of the game to win. You know, he threw the long pass to, I think, Deshante Jones or Tyreek Milton, I forget which one, versus Oklahoma State. They needed a play. Mm-hmm. He threw the long touchdown pass. Last week they needed a play, and he threw the long touchdown pass to Akeem Butler. So he's proven that he can step up and play when the game is on the line.
Well, Jack, I know you told me that we didn't need to talk politics today, but before I let you go, I did want to ask you one question as it relates to next week's election. You know, as you have talked to some of the voters in your district, you know, what have you found to be the most important issue for this election?
Well, I think as I talk to voters, a lot of people are very happy with what's going on with the economy. You know, that's ultimately the big thing for people is taxes or property taxes, the economy, are they finding work, they have jobs. And that's what I hear about most of the job at the doors. And that's what we've really tried to do over the last few years is build an economy where everyone can work. And there's lots of opportunities here in Iowa. The other big thing that is an issue for Iowa is we have more job openings than we have people to fill them. And we need to continue to either find ways to get more people the skills they need for those jobs, or we need to bring people into Iowa to fill those jobs. And if we do that, our economy will really do well.
Well, Jack, I enjoyed the conversation. Thanks a lot for coming in today.
Thank you very much.
All right, you're listening to the Ankeny Fanatic Weekly Podcast, sponsored by Iowa Realty. The Ankeny office here at Iowa Realty will close in excess of $250 million in real estate in 2018. Their agents represent over 20 new construction builders and communities all over the metro. With interest rates at historic lows, would you like to know what your home is worth in today's market? If so, you can give them a call at 453-5800. That number again is 453-5800. And also here at Iowa Realty, they have Midland Title and Escrow Services, which specializes in the closing of real estate transactions. They are committed to providing exceptional customer service during each transaction, ensuring all legal requirements are met, resolving complex issues as they arise, and addressing all questions and concerns in a timely manner. They have escrow and settlement services for residential real estate, commercial real estate, for sale by owner real estate, mortgage and refinance, and real estate owned and bank owned property. All right. Well, now we want to bring in our second guest. He is an Ankeny native and a former Iowa State football star who recently spent some time with the Dallas Cowboys. Of course, I'm talking about Joel Lanning. Joel, thanks for coming in. How
are
you doing?
I'm good. How are you? Thanks for having me.
Oh, you bet. Well, let's dive right into your experiences with the Cowboys there. Obviously, you wanted to make the team. You didn't. You're probably one of the last guys cut, weren't you?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I made it to the final cuts. I had a great experience. I mean, that room was really cool. I had a great group of guys with me as well. I mean, Sean Lee was the leader of it, and then Jalen Smith and Damian Wilson, and those guys have been there for a while. And then they brought in some guys that they signed, you know, that had been in the league for a little bit, like Joe Thomas. He played at Green Bay for a while, and I don't know, it was just cool to meet with all those guys. And then the guy they drafted in the first round, Leighton Van Der Esch, we got pretty close when we were down there. He's a really cool guy. You know, he's deserved of that, you know, first round pick, whatever. He's a great player, big guy, and can run, and, you know, it's a pretty cool experience.
Now, you hear stories about when NFL players, you know, are cut about, you know, you'll get a phone call and you're told to come to the coach's office and bring your playbook. You know, is that pretty much how it went for you?
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, our playbooks were on iPads, and we ended up having to turn in our iPads like 2 days before that. So, I mean, everyone had to do it anyways. But, yeah, you pretty much sit in the hotel room, wait for a text all day, just laying there watching a movie or something, trying to keep yourself occupied so you don't think about it. But, yeah, that's what it's like.
That had to be kind of excruciating, waiting that out, huh?
Yeah. I mean, you don't know when it's going to happen, but, I mean, Coach Garrett, after that last preseason game in Houston, said this is when it gets really tough and gets super serious, and this is the worst part of the job, but it's how it works. And so pretty much said we'll be in contact with some of you guys here shortly. So,
well, during camp, I know you were playing a lot of special teams, and you were even doing some long snapping. And you had told me before that, you know, you'd have to make the team through your performance on special teams.
Yeah.
So do you know if you were close to making the team, or did they even discuss that at all with you? Or
I don't really know if I was – I probably wasn't close to making the 53-man. I think I was pretty close to the practice squad, though, just because of – you know, what Coach said to me when I was leaving, but who knows, he might say that to everybody as well. You know, I was pretty much said I was like a typical practice squad guy, and just the whole time I was there, I acted like a professional and all this stuff. So it was just, I mean, who knows? I mean, I felt like I was doing well. Just, you know, they had their money and a bunch of other guys, and obviously at that level, it's part of a business as well, so you just got to understand the situation.
Well, you obviously played only 1 year at linebacker in college. After making the transition from quarterback, you know, that clearly put you behind some other players in terms of experience. You know, do you think that was the biggest factor in why you didn't make the team?
Yeah. I mean, a lot of it is just like I feel like I'm playing catch up still. I mean, this is like my second year pretty much doing it. But, I mean, I've only played, 13 games at college level, and I played pretty much like 2.5 at the professional level. So, I mean, it's 15 games that I've played at linebacker. So, I've got a lot of learning to do. Where guys have played there their whole life, or they've been in the league for 5-6 years at one position. And, you know, it's just there's a lot to learn and figure out. I mean, the biggest part about the NFL from college is, like, the mental part of the game. So the playbooks are a lot more complex. There's just a lot more things that to pay attention to and that they expect you to know. So you just – that was like the hardest part. I didn't think that I was like physically like out of shape compared to other guys or anything like that. I thought I was right there with those guys. So it's just, you know, what I didn't know and what those guys knew, I think was the difference just from playing the position for a while.
Well, I was just going to ask about the physical part of it, because I know you told me before that there was a big jump though, going from the college game to the NFL in terms of how athletic, you know, everybody is, but,
yes.
But physically you feel like you can compete on that level?
Yeah, I do. I felt like, you know, some of those guys, I was right there with them, you know, with lifting and all that stuff. And, you know, the physical part where they're all teaching you the same techniques to, you know, attack linemen and fullbacks and pullers and all that. So, I mean, I felt like I was right there with those guys. But like I said, it comes down to business and just trying to get your time out there. I mean, they're obviously going to invest time in others, you know, with the more money they got in somebody they can play. So, just finding your way. You got to wait your turn.
Sure. Now, who was the freakiest athlete that you saw there?
Freakiest was probably Leighton or in the linebacker room or the whole.
Either or, yeah.
Now that you say that. I mean, Zeke's pretty freakishly athletic.
Oh yeah.
To see the way he can like scoot through tiny holes that you wouldn't see, he's pretty athletic. And then Tavon Austin, I remember watching him in college and getting recruited. He's pretty freaky.
I remember when he played at West Virginia. Yeah, he was pretty hard to bring down.
Yeah, he can do a lot of things. So it's pretty crazy to watch.
Now, did you see much of Jerry Jones walking around there, you know, during your time with the Cowboys? Or did you have any interaction with him?
We got to meet him one time when we were down in Dallas. But when we were out in camp in California, he was out there walking around a lot, him and Stephen Jones. Obviously, that's their team, so I think they're going to be out there the whole time. But I never really met them that much. I met Stephen more than I met Jerry. Jerry addressed the team out in California before camp started, and then that was pretty much it. You saw him before games and stuff like that.
Well, I know he used to really be hands-on, but maybe over the years he's kind of backed off a little bit. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, it also might have been preseason too, where he's kind of more laid back. Yeah. But, I mean, who knows?
So what have you been doing since you got released? You know, didn't you look into the CFL?
Yeah, I actually went up to Saskatchewan for like 4 or 5 days. They told my agent one thing, and then when I got there, it was another. So it's kind of just miscommunication. So I ended up coming back home. But I've just been working out. Right now, staying busy, helping out at Iowa State a little bit. There's a new league coming out. I think it's the AAF or something, the Alliance American Football League.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of made as like a developmental league for the NFL, but you're not really, teams aren't directly affiliated with the NFL team like it would be in the MLB or something. So it's just made so that your contract's open. So if a team wants you, they can take you and go up there anytime, or you can come back down. But that starts in January, and I'm with the San Antonio team. So camp's in like the January 4th, so I'll be leaving at the beginning of the year pretty much.
Oh, great. Well, it sounds like a good opportunity for you.
Yeah.
Well, now, do you watch the NFL pretty closely every Sunday? You know, is there any chance that, you know, somebody could call you if they suddenly had a rash of injuries at linebacker?
They could. I mean, I don't know. It's kind of getting late now, I think, for that maybe. I watch it every once in a while. I don't have a favorite team, but I like to watch, you know, the Cowboys now because – obviously, I knew those guys and
sure.
Want to see them succeed, so it's kind of fun to watch them.
Now, is the Arena Link something that you would consider? It seems like with your versatility that maybe that'd be a good option for you.
Probably not. I don't see myself playing for the Barnstormers.
So. Uh-huh. I'm sure a lot of people here locally would enjoy watching you play.
Yeah.
Well, you said you still are doing some stuff with Iowa State. Let's talk about the Cyclones a little bit.
Yeah.
They're certainly on a roll now. You know, do you like their chances to get to the Big 12 title game?
I do. The schedule started out rough. Obviously, they had a rough schedule to begin with, but and who knows? It might even be different if we don't miss that first game. I think it's huge. I could see him running the table as well.
Well, Brock Purdy has deservedly gotten, you know, a lot of recognition for what he's done, but they have another true freshman, Mike Rose, who's starting a linebacker, and he ranks fourth on the team in tackles. You know, how impressed have you been, with those two guys? You know how hard it is to make that jump from high school to playing your first year in college.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely couldn't do what Brock Purdy's doing right now coming out of high school. I just wasn't really ready, I don't think, for that stage. But, I mean, props to him. He prepares like it every week. I know him. I know Kyle pretty well, Kemp, and I know that those two watch film continuously all the time, and that's what it takes at that level. And then Mike Rose, I mean, to be 18 years old and come in and take a starting job right away like that is pretty crazy. Props to him as well. It's fun to watch those guys play. I wish I could play 5 years at linebacker, you know, and had that opportunity or something. But, I mean, good for him. He's a smart kid, deserves it, and works hard. And, I just can't say enough about what those guys are doing and what the coaches are doing to prepare those guys that are so young.
We said you wish that you had 5 years to play linebacker in college. I mean, looking back at it now, do you wish you had made that switch earlier? Obviously, that opportunity hadn't come up, but.
Well, yeah. I mean, yeah, it would have been nice. Just because, like I said, you know, when I was down with the Cowboys, I felt like I was always trying to play catch up with those guys. You know, it would have been nice to have 5 years under my belt and just be more technical. You know, I felt like, and that's what I mean when I, like, behind, just like a little on the technique and stuff like that, seeing keys and things. So just the little things.
Also wanted to ask you about Colin Olsen. Of course, Colin played on Ankeny's state championship team with you in 2012.
Yep.
And then he followed you to Iowa State, where he began his career as a defensive lineman. You know, he made the switch to the offensive line after the Liberty Bowl, and then he worked his way up the depth chart. And, you know, now he's become a fixture in the starting lineup. You know, you got to be happy for him.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, his older brother, Cody, you know, growing up with him. So we Olsen's a great family friends of ours. You know, we see him every weekend up in Ames if there's a game. So, yeah, we're absolutely ecstatic for Colin. I mean, I can't be happier for the guy myself, because I just know, like, what it's like to, you know, put everything into one position and then somebody asks you to change. I mean, it's not easy. But, I mean, he's obviously athletic enough to do it, and great athletic ability from, you know, him and learning coaches in high school and stuff like that to be able to do it. I mean, it definitely helped, too, that he played both ways in high school as well. So,
well, I know you were honored at Saturday's game as Iowa State's Male Athlete of the Year for 2017-18. That's a pretty cool honor for you, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was. I didn't even really – I mean, I knew about it because it came out a long time ago, like last year, but – just, I mean, when you look at the names on those on that list, it's kind of crazy to see who are up there, like George and Monte and like Kale Sanderson and some of those guys. It's just like, it's ridiculous to, you know, see that I got those the same award that they did. But, I mean, I can't give enough credit to my coaching staff, so.
Yeah, it's a pretty nice company to be with there, isn't it?
Yeah, it's pretty nice, that's right.
Well, I was talking earlier with Jack Whitver about the issue regarding concussions and head trauma in football. Now, have you ever had any concussions?
I have not.
You've been lucky, huh?
Yes, I've been very fortunate.
Ever been even slightly dinged up a little bit? Or?
I mean, there's been a few times where you get a hit and you kind of just have to shake it off a little bit. But, I mean, that was obviously before, you know, where they had people watching. The extra eye in the sky is what they say in the NFL or something. There's always – they have somebody now just sitting in the stands just looking for it. But no, I mean, I never, like, granted, I played 4 years of college quarterback, so it's kind of, they're protecting you a little bit. And
right.
Obviously, I wasn't down in there like I was last year, but I'm never, yeah. I mean, I honestly, like, wouldn't even know what it would feel like.
Well, that's good.
Yeah, so I had no idea.
Well, when you were a quarterback at Iowa State, you know, you obviously took some hard hits, and you were a very physical runner when you ran the ball. You kind of sought out that contact, but, you know, like you said, you also weren't getting hit on every play, and they did kind of protect you in practice. Once you moved to linebacker, you know, you're having, you know, contact on pretty much every single play. Mm-hmm. You know, did you take more of a physical pounding, you know, throughout the course of the year being a linebacker than you did at quarterback?
Absolutely. Kind of like when I first made the switch in spring ball, it was kind of like, I didn't know if I could do it, because my, like, body was so beat up from just, you know, I'm not used to getting hit like that. You know, I went from getting hit 12 times a year to getting hit every single day in practice, which was huge. And luckily we got some time off in spring ball and I got my body back. And then after that, I was kind of just normal, got used to it, got the soreness out. But you definitely get more beat up because, like, as a quarterback, you hand the ball off and there's no contact, you know, whereas as a linebacker, your job is to, you have a gap responsibility and you got to take care of that gap and you got to go hit somebody no matter what, even if you make the tackle or don't, the ball bounces or what. So you're always hitting somebody for something, I mean, no matter what. And yeah, so you just got to get used to it, but it definitely takes a toll on your body when you start hitting games like 8, 9, 10, 11 and all those.
I'll bet.
Yeah.
Now, when you played quarterback, I think you were playing at like 235 or 240. So did you have to put on any more weight or any more muscle to make that transition to linebacker?
No, that's what I played at. Yeah, I played it that way too. I was a little lighter as a quarterback. I was like 225. So I played at like 230, 235.
Oh, okay.
But yeah, I mean, that's what I am right now, almost 240. So just kind of staying up there because, I mean, linebackers better to carry a little bit of weight, so.
Well, the fact that you haven't had any concussions, you know, maybe you're not that concerned about the long-term effects, you know, of playing football. I was just going to ask you about that. So, I mean, do you have any concerns at all about what your body's going to be like, you know, down the road?
I mean, definitely think about it, but you don't think about it when you're playing, I can tell you that. So, I mean, it's the last thing that's on your mind. As for me, I'm not really worried about it because, like I said, I haven't had any of those problems, thankfully. It's been actually really healthy in my sports career. I've had some minor injuries here and there, but nothing serious. So I mean, it is what it is. The game's definitely, they're protecting the game, and then the equipment and stuff is getting a lot safer. So, I mean, it's, I don't, yeah, whatever.
Sure.
I don't see much about it.
All right. Well, now with this new league that's going to be starting up in January, I don't know if you know all the specifics about it, but will they have like a 53-man roster like the NFL teams do, or do you know what the roster size is going to be like?
So I've heard it's like a 50-man roster, no practice squad, so it's kind of just like make the team or you don't. But it's, I heard it's a 50-man roster because, like, there's no, from what I've heard, I'm not sure, there's no, like, kickoffs, so that takes away, you know, kind of kicking and stuff like that. And then there's no PATs. You have to go for two every time. So really you only need a kicker for field goals. So hopefully you find a guy that can punt and kick.
Yeah, that'll be interesting.
So it'll be, yeah, it'll be a little different. That's what I've heard. Who knows how accurate that is. So it's just a little different. But, I mean, it's pretty much just like a regular, you know, 53-man. It's pretty much a two deep on both sides of the ball and few specialists.
So you said you'll be going down there in January. So do you have to, like, do you have to make the team, or are you already guaranteed a spot, you think? Or
no, I signed a contract with the team, so I'm there in camp. So that starts the 4th and goes till the end of January. And then the season is February through into April. And there's 8 teams, 10 game season, and then there's a two weeks for playoffs.
Oh, okay.
So, I mean, half the teams make it, half don't. So, I mean, it'll be interesting. First game right now is scheduled for the first weekend after the Super Bowl.
Oh, okay.
So.
We have to adjust your body to playing football at a different time of year, huh?
Yeah, it'll be a little different. It'll be a little different. But, I mean, it's at least it's, they're, all the teams are in the southern part of the country, so it's nice. We won't have to worry about it being too cold.
Oh, there you go. Well, I'm sure your ultimate goal then is to, you know, make an impact there and then catch the eyes of the NFL and eventually get back to the NFL, right?
Yep, absolutely. Kind of my situation is I need some more tape, more film at linebacker. So that's kind of what it is.
All right, Joel, I really appreciate you coming in today. Good luck with the San Antonio team there. Hope to hear a lot about you here in the next few months.
Yeah, appreciate you.
You bet. All right, you've been listening to the Ankeny Fanatic Weekly Podcast, sponsored by Iowa Realty. Iowa Realty is very proud and fortunate to have Home Services Lending, Iowa Title, Midland Title and Escrow, and Home Services Insurance as part of their one-stop shopping model. They're able to help you buy and sell anywhere in the state of Iowa. They can also help you, your family, and friends who are moving from anywhere to anywhere in the world through their business affiliates. If you would like information on how to become a realtor, you can call Mike Stanbro at 453-5350, or you can email Mike at Mike Stanbro, that's STANBROUGH, at iowarealty.com. I want to thank my guests again, Jack Whitfer and Joel Lanning, for coming in today. Joel was kind of a last-minute fill-in for another guest who had to postpone at the last minute, and I appreciate Joel for coming in on such a short notice. Come back next week for another edition of the Ankeny Fanatic Weekly Podcast.